Chapter 51. Hugh Gibbett crouched on the roof of a warehouse deep in the Warrens. In a more prosperous time, it had been used to store textiles. Later, smugglers had used it. Now, it was a crumbling ruin that housed guild rats of the Burning Man Guild. None of that mattered to Hugh, except for the inconvenience of having to kill the 10-year-old boy who was standing guard. Or maybe it had been a girl. Hard to tell. The only thing that mattered to Hugh was a slab of stone on the floor by one crumbled wall. It looked like it weighed 1,000 pounds, and it was as weathered as all the other stones. But it opened on hinges that not even the guild rats knew about. It was the second exit for one of the largest safe houses in the city. Right now, if Hugh's source was correct, the safe house held approximately 300 whores, enough food and water to keep them for a month, and the real prizes, Mama Kay and her lieutenant, Aegon Brandt. Hugh didn't expect those two to be here, not really, but he could always hope. He always had trouble with the big jobs. A big job required such balance. The pleasure in so much blood threatened his professionalism. It was so easy to get caught up in the sheer joy of it, watching blood spill or dribble or spurt. Blood in all its glorious hues, the red, red blood fresh from the lungs, the black blood from the liver, and every shade in between. He wanted to bleed everybody dry to please Nisos. But on the big jobs, he couldn't usually take the time. It made him feel like he was doing things halfway. Plus, it always left him depressed. After he'd killed and bled 30 or 32 at the Gyre estate, he hadn't been the same for weeks. Even all the killing during the coup couldn't satisfy him. It was all a letdown. The Gyre estate had been the best. He'd still been in the estate when the Duke got home. He'd watched Regnus Gyre run from room to room, mad with grief, slipping in the Nisos pools Hugh had left in every hall. He'd been so excited by watching that he couldn't even kill the Duke, though he knew the God King wished it. He'd finished that job the next night, of course, but that had been nothing. Not even close. This job wouldn't be too hard. There would be some tight moments early on. First, he had to get in. He'd kill the children if he had to, but guild rats were slippery. They knew every hole in the Warrens the size of a walnut and could fit into it with room to spare. It would be better not to give them the chance to warn anyone. After he got in, there would be a guard or two on the back exit. It was an exit that had never been used, and there was only so long a man could stare at a wall before he got bored and tired. So the guards there might be asleep. Then Hugh would need to kill the guards at the front exit without raising an alarm. Then he'd have to block or destroy the front exit. After that point, it wouldn't matter if the whores found out he was there or not. He could handle whores. Then, well, the God King had told him that he had 24 hours to do whatever he wanted. "You," the God King had said, "make me a cataclysm." The God King planned to open up the place afterward and march every noble in the city through it. When the bodies were starting to get ripe, they'd start marching the rest of the city through it. The residents of the Warrens would go last. Then, the God King would have a public ceremony. People selected at random from among the rabbits, the artisans, and the nobility would be sent into the massacre site. While they were inside, the God King's witches would seal the exits. Gareth or Sul expected it would provide a forceful deterrent to future rebellion. But Hugh felt uneasy. He was a professional. He was the best wet boy in the city, the best in the world, the best ever. He treasured that position, and there was only one thing that could threaten it. Himself. He'd taken stupid risks at the Gyre estate, idiotic risks. It had all worked out, but the fact remained that he'd been out of control. There had just been too much blood, too much thrill, He'd walked like a god through an orgy of worship that was death. He'd felt invulnerable during the hours he'd butchered the gyres and their servants. He'd spent time displaying the bodies. He'd hung up several by their feet and cut their throats to bleed them to create that glorious lake of blood in the last hallway. His job was to kill, and he'd gone dangerously beyond that. Durzo had been a killer. He took lives with the impersonal precision of a tailor. Durzo Blint would never have put himself at risk. It was why some people had considered him Hugh's equal. Hugh hated that. He was feared. But Blint was respected. His niggling worry was that the judgment was deserved. That was why 300 might be his undoing. The beast within would come out. 300 might be too much. No, he was Hugh Gibbet. Nothing was too much for Hugh Gibbet. He was the best wet boy in the world. Tactically, this job wouldn't be nearly the challenge some other jobs had been. But when people whispered his name, this would be what they remembered. This would be his legacy. They would remember this all over the world. The guild rats were asleep, huddled together in clumps against the cold. Hugh was about to drop through the hole in the roof when he saw something. At first he thought he was imagining it. It began as a whisper of wind, a puff of dust scattered in the moonlight. But the dust didn't settle, and there was no wind tonight. Still, the dust seemed to swirl in one place, gathering in one of the patches of moonlight in the warehouse near the children. One of the children woke and gave a little cry, and in a second, every child in the guild was awake. The whirlwind became a tiny tornado. Though there was still no wind, something was taking shape. Black specks obscuring and spinning at a dizzying pace to a height of 6 feet. The tornado glowed an iridescent scintillating blue. Sparks shot out and danced across the floor, and the children cried out. Taking shape through the tornado was a man, or something like a man. The figure flashed blue, spraying light in every direction, and not even Hugh was fast enough to cover his eyes. When he looked again, a figure unlike any he had ever seen stood before the children, who were cowering, wide-eyed, on the floor. The man appeared to be carved from glossy black marble or shaped from liquid metal. His clothes weren't so much clothes as skin, though he appeared to wear shoes and was sexless. His whole body was unrelieved black, and every contour was crisply defined. He was lean, and every muscle was etched, from his shoulders to his V of a chest, to his stomach, to his legs. There was something funny about his skin, though. At first, a man or demon or statue made of flesh had reflected light like burnished steel. Now, only parts of him gleamed. The crescents of his biceps, the horizontal slashes of his abdominal muscles. The rest of him faded from glossy black to matte black. Most frightening was the demon's face. It looked even less human than the rest of it. The mouth a small gash, cheekbones high, hair a disheveled spiky black, brows prominent and disapproving above overlarge eyes out of a nightmare. The eyes were the palest blue of the coldest winter dawn. They spoke of judgment without pity, of punishment without remorse. As the figure studied the children, Hugh became more and more certain that the eyes were actually glowing. Wisps of smoke curled out from them, from whatever infernal fires burned within that hellish figure. "Children," the figure said, "be not afraid." There were gulps all around, and despite the words, every guild rat looked on the verge of bolting. "I will not harm you," the demon said. "But you are not safe here. You must go to Guinevere Kirenna, the one you know as Mama Kay. Go and stay with her. Tell her the Night Angel has returned." Several children nodded, wide-eyed, but they all seemed frozen to the ground. "Go!" the night angel said. He stepped forward through a shadow that cut the moonlight on the warehouse floor, and an eerie thing happened. Where the shadow cut across the night angel, the demon disappeared. An arm, a diagonal slash of his body, and his head disappeared, except for two glowing spots that hung in space where his eyes should be. "Run!" the night angel yelled. The children bolted like only guild rats can. Hugh knew that he should kill this night angel. Surely the God King would reward him. Besides, the demon blocked Hugh's entrance to his assignment. The night angel stood between him and more than 300 succulent kills. But it was hard to breathe. He wasn't afraid. It was simply that he didn't do jobs for free. He'd kill this angel, but he'd leave for now, make the God King pay him for it. If the night angel knew about the underground chamber, it was already too late. If the night angel didn't know about the chamber, the horse would still be there tomorrow. He'd go get a contract on the night angel today and come back tomorrow and kill all the whores and the night angel, too. It was completely logical. Fear had nothing to do with it. The night angel turned his face up, and his eyes locked on Hugh Gibbet's. They flashed from a smoldering blue to a fiercely burning red. In the next moment, the rest of the night angel vanished, except for the burning red points of light.
"Dost thou dare thy judgment this night, Hubert Marion?"
the night angel asked. Cold dread paralyzed him. Hubert Marion! No one had called him that in 15 years. The night angel was moving toward him. Hugh was on the verge of fleeing when the night angel stumbled. Hugh stopped, puzzled. The ruby eyes dimmed, flickered. The night angel sagged. Hugh dropped to the floor and drew his sword. The night angel drew itself up once more by an act of will, but Hugh read exhaustion there. He attacked. Their swords rang in the night. Then Hugh's kick blew through a block and connected with the night angel's chest. The creature flew back, its sword flying from its hand. It landed in a heap and began to shimmer. In moments, the night angel was gone. In its place lay a man, naked, barely conscious. It was Kylar Stern, Durzo's apprentice. Hugh cursed him, his fear bleeding into outrage. It was all tricks, illusions. Hugh stomped forward and slashed at Kylar's exposed neck, but his blade went completely through the man's head without resistance, shattering the illusion. Hugh had barely stopped the slash when he felt a rope tighten around his ankles and yank him off his feet. Fingers dug into his right elbow, hitting the pressure point and enervating his arm. A hand grabbed his hair and smacked his face against the floor again and again, breaking his nose with the first smack. On the third time, Hugh's descending face came down on a rock. It ripped into his eye. Then he was rolling over and over. Hugh thrashed with all his talent and hit nothing. Then his arms were behind his back, and with a swift jerk upward, the shoulders were dislocated. Hugh screamed. When he next thought to thrash, he found his arms and legs tied together. From his remaining eye, Hugh caught sight of Kylar Stern, wobbling, clearly exhausted, but still pulling Hugh across the floor by his cloak. Hugh thrashed again, trying to kick something, anything, trying to stand. Kylar dropped him on his back, and Hugh screamed again as it put pressure on his bound, dislocated shoulders. Kylar stood over him. Whatever the black skin had been, illusion or something else, Kylar obviously didn't have the power to hold it now. He stood naked, but his face was as much of a mask as the mask had been. Hugh gathered his talent to try another kick. Kylar's foot streaked down first, breaking Hugh's shin. Hugh screamed against the exploding blackness of pain that threatened to make him fall unconscious, and when he looked again, Kylar was kicking a section of the floor. It came open on unseen hinges. Inside, a hidden water wheel turned, driven by the flowing waters of the Plith River. Hugh realized it must be the mechanism that opened the huge door of the safe house, its mighty gears currently disengaged, spinning slowly.
"Nisos is the god of waters, right?" Kylar asked.
"What are you doing?"
Hugh shouted, hysterical.
"Pray,"
Kylar said, his voice pitiless.
"Maybe he'll save you."
Kylar did something with Hugh's cloak. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the cloak tightened around his neck. It started dragging him across the floor.
"Nisos!"
Hugh screamed through the strangling tightness. "Nisos!" The cloak pulled him into the water, and for a long, blessed moment, the tension around his neck vanished. Hugh kicked his good leg and found the surface. Then the cloak tightened and drew him up into the gear. The disengaged gear pulled him out of the water by his throat and then flipped him over, dragging him back under the water again. He couldn't breathe. It dragged him out of the water again, flipped him again, and pulled him back under the water. This time, he kicked as he came out of the water. It gave him enough slack to suck in a great breath. Then he was flipped and plunged under the water once more. Hugh tried to fight his bonds, but any pressure he put on his shoulders was agony. His arms were tied so tightly he couldn't pop his shoulders back into their joints, and his good leg kicked against nothing but water. He screamed again as he came out of the water, but the gear ground on, up, down, up, down. Kylar watched Hugh Gibbet pulled from the water, and then pulled under, over and over, sometimes begging, sometimes coughing up dirty river water. He felt no remorse. He deserved it. However, Kylar knew what he knew. He knew that. And maybe it was as simple as that. Swaying on his feet, Kylar looked for the switch to open the safe house. He hadn't been faking his exhaustion. He was just lucky that he'd had enough talent left to fool Hugh. In a fair fight, Hugh would have taken him. Kylar had no illusions about that. But Durzo had taught him there was no such thing as a fair fight. Hugh let himself be taken by surprise, because he thought he was the best. Durzo had never considered himself the best. He just thought everyone else was worse than he was. It might seem like the same thing, but it wasn't. Finally, Kylar found what he was looking for. He grabbed a plank beside the rock and pulled it up. The spinning gear slid sideways until its teeth met another gear's. They grated for a moment, then meshed together and turned. Hugh was pulled inexorably out of the water one more time. He screamed. His head caught between the great teeth of the gears, and his scream pitched abruptly higher. The gears stopped, straining. Then Hugh's head popped like a bloody pimple. His legs jerked spastically, and his whole body arched out of the water. Then his corpse flopped to the side, and the gears turned on, blood staining the water. The enormous rock lifted, revealing a tunnel into the earth. An alarm bell clanged in the depths. In moments, a pair of guards thundered up the steps, spears in their hands.
"Have to evacuate,"
Kylar said. He wobbled, and neither men made a move to help him.
"God King knows you're here. Tell Mama Kay."
Then he passed out.